Accession number 29423, Reel 2.
And all those who put on report for whatever they've done came before you. And there I was, as a magistrate, literally. And Sam was standing at the back of me. And I was terrified at all when I was running. He said some very rude things. I won't say them to you, but they were rude. Because they all told the tale and I'd had them all off. And it's an hour bit of a difference. Next Monday. But he didn't say it in those words. He said it as an Australian. And imagine how vulgar it was. So, the following Monday came along. You could do everything except stop the pay, and that's to be done by a higher authority. So I gave them all 28 days to go back to camp, which meant they took out their cookhouse and peeled potatoes, helping them out brown and clean and tidy, and they didn't like me for that. So Sam says, another mouthful of Australian abuse. But anyway, I learned the hard way. And it's also funny when I think about it now. As my elderly capacity is no good. But I had that job for a long, long time, and we were chosen to go to France to celebrate the fall of the Bastille, and do a mass flypast with the French Air Force around Paris, and we landed. The grass aerodromes in those days, not concrete runways. So I landed as a squadron, and Sam said before we took off, we always took off as a squadron. I said, I want every wingtip overlapping when we land. Well, with a spread fire, when you're flying in formation, your hands go like that up and down on the throttle. So literally non stop. You've got your control stick there, throttle there, your undercarriage is here, and your pump, it 32 pumps. So you try to keep in formation, doing this, holding the stick, and pumping. I don't know how we managed it, but we did. And it must have been quite a sight to see there were 14 Spitfires landing formation, wingtips overlapping. And because we all knew that there would be such a bloody going on with Samson. Anyway, we were all happy. Then we were lined up. All the officers were lined up. All the pilots were, we were lined up. And we were inspected by a French general. And I'm standing next to Samson. And they said, Samson, I see you brought the squadron mascot with you. And then Samson's Australian abuse. Fortunately choked it back. And he looked at me, and I'd been patted on the cheek by this general. And Samson was terrified I was going to tell him it's fortunate. Anyway, I didn't. I was very put off. And we got over that. And then they got me. They were rotten sots. They got me very drunk. But went to the other one at the Bourget. And they teamed champagne down my throat. And it was sweet champagne. And it was very pleasant. But I was very drunk. And we then got the coach, went to our hotel. Oh, God, now it's in the morning. And I got up, and I thought, well, I just have to pull myself together. And I thought, I won't be flying. And the next day, Samson said, right, get your kid together. We're going to do a practice. Fly past five miles. And I thought, oh, no. Oh, and my head's going like this. So anyway, we did. And when we landed, the fighter pilots were all men, all captains. Anyway, they got bars in the hangar. I was taken in the hangar. And the French beer being poured down the throat. I've never been pulled to so well as I was on this French beer. The hangover disappeared. And we went on. We had to go to a reception at the British Embassy. So we're all there in towels, all very smart. Meet the ambassador. And they will tell you, don't call him ambassador, you call him your honour. I said, I think that's it, yes. I don't know what to say. And don't you freeborn be coming out with anything else. I said, no, sir, no. And so in we went, and there's Manley, who was a flag officer, who was much older than me. When I say much older, he was probably about 25, but he was an old man. And he's at me, and he's poking me in the back. And I said, so what do you want? And I said, I want a drink. He said, it looks like that this main bug is going to give us one. And that there was a band there, Brigade of Guards or somebody. The band was playing. And Manley said, this is from Crates of Ale at the back of the curtain over there. Go get some bottles out of there. I said, I'm not going to do as you told. And so I went and I'm getting these bottles of beer out of the crate. And a great big pair of us caught me by the wrist. I looked like the great guardsman of the band. I'm pinching that beer. Oh, yes. Anyway, eventually I got a drink. And Manley said, what a bloody bore this is, isn't it? I said, oh, I'm not enjoying it. Let's go. So I said, we can't walk out. I said, I'd have to go say goodnight to him and his wife. And Samson won't like it if we go before him. So I said, well, how are we going to go? He said, over the railings. Oh, Thomas said, he's in dress, planning the railings of the British Embassy. And we got out, we went up in the bomb march. And it was a cracking night. But there's elderly, what I call elderly, older people in the squadron, used to leave me on shamefully.
I'm going to have to stop the reel here and pause for breath. Hang on. Okay, and this is Wing Commander John Freeborn, reel 2. So this was still 1939?
Sorry?
Was this still 1939?
1939.
Because you were actually in the forces when the lead up to war was going on, when war actually broke out, it must have been very different for you than it was for the civilians.
Oh, yes, yes. Very much so. Well, when the war broke out, I was still a squadron adjutant. So, a squadron adjutant, you got an awful lot of perks. You didn't have to do a duty pilot, which was a 24-hour duty. And you didn't have to do an orderly officer, which again was almost a 24-hour duty. You had to go as orderly officer when your turn came up into Washington's office, and he used to have a pack of cards and he'd say, pick a card. Well, these cards were all been turned up, and if you were unlucky you'd probably get turned out of the guard at 3 o'clock in the morning. By the way, they all turned up for 9 or 10 o'clock at night, so he always picked, he never humbled it. And poor Washington, it was a shame, because he was a very clever engineer, but he was no station commander. Well, every Wednesday we had station commander's parade, and all the officers had to line up on the parade ground, and he used to inspect us all. And he would say, "Boy born, am I hurting you?" "No, sir." "Well," he said, "I should be. I'm standing on your head. Get your hair cut and report to me at 11 o'clock. Why would I get there? I couldn't get off the camp. And he went to the camp with armour, and he didn't want to stop cutting. And this is what those things that how they happened. And the funny thing was, I had a Batman. And the Batman in those days were civilians. But they'd all been in the armed forces, and most of them had been guardsmen. And mine was a bloke called Fox, a giant of a man, and he used to be away to breakfast. After I'd had my breakfast, I had to go on parade. He'd be waiting with a greatcoat. I put my greatcoat on and brushed me down. I did, like an old woman. And he used to watch the railings at the parade. And he'd be going,
thumbs up.
These things made life so intolerable, made us so happy. But then we got out of B flight with Paddy Tracy, an Irishman, and we had another pilot in the squadron, Vincent Byrne, who featured with me in the shooting down of the Hurricanes. Vincent was a shocker. He really was a baddie, and he did everything he could to annoy Tracy. They went to school together in Dublin. They're both Irish, and Ben would knock ink over his logbook on purpose to annoy Tracy. And Tracy couldn't cope with him, and he was sent for the priest. And the Catholic priest had come to have a go at this Ben, and he just got so well. But Tracy was a funny fellow, funny bloke, a very brave man. But I was more inclined to like Milan. So I got transferred to A flight with Milan. I got rid of Tracy, which was a bad move. So the war started. And I'm in I'm still squadron adjutant, and I'm in A flight. And a rate came up on the board. This was the second or third day of the war. And so, fighter commander was in the section from 74 Squadron, a flight of 74 Squadron to scramble, on which was A flight was sent up. And Bird's aircraft wouldn't start. If he could do anything to upset the job he did. Anyway, his aircraft wouldn't start. It was foggy, but if you looked up, it was crystal clear blue. So I suppose there was a haze about 20 feet. So anyway, we went off. And when I got off the ground, you could see where you'd gone through the haze, by the track. And we chased, Milan had gone. And we chased Milan. And then, next thing, we saw aircraft. And Milan gave the order, number one attack, go. So number one attack, go we did. And down went two hurricanes. And unfortunately, one was killed. And the other one landed in a field. And when we came back, it was quite a strange thing. Well, I'd lost Byrne, but there was Polly Flinders, a sergeant pilot, was with me. And I saw a twin engine aircraft, and I'm after it. And he got in front of me. And I said, get out of the bloody way, I saw it first. He said, it's a bloody fool. And of course, it was a bloody. I was going to shoot that down as well. So, fortunately, Flinders saved my bacon there. Anyway, we landed, and Samson wasn't very pleased with me at all, I tell you. And even less pleased with Byrne. And he said, go to your room, you're under arrest. They're shooting hurricanes down. And I thought, oh, bloody hell, this is not going to be good. But I wasn't allowed to communicate with him in any shape or form. I couldn't go to him. An officer from 54 Squadron came to guard me. And that was it. Until Samson told me about Sir Patrick Hastings, and so but I kept getting little notes from Byrne, being passed by Batman. Don't admit anything. We'll get kicked out, and once you're on the ATA, we'll get a lot more money, and it won't be as dangerous. And of course, it wouldn't have been. So, I didn't want any part of this. We've done it, we've got to stand on it and see what happens. And the thing was, there was a court martial, we were exonerated. Milan got such a hard time from Hastings. He said, you're just a blatant liar. He said, how are you going to stand there? It got over to the prosecution in Milan. Nothing for the defense, for us. And he told him in no certain terms. And Milan and myself never barely spoke again. We were exonerated. But, you see, when we landed, I couldn't understand why Samson was waiting for us. And of course, I did not show the hurricane down. I never shot an aeroplane down, but anyway, it's very sad because Paul Black was killed. There's been so much speculation since, and so much written about it, and none of it's true. None of them know exactly what happened, because the Civil Defence was taken in camera, and the court martial was in camera. So nobody knows. There were no visitors, nobody there. Wasn't an open court at all. So that was that. But Milan was so angry, and after he landed, he cleared off home. So he lived out, and he cleared off home. And he wriggled every way, he didn't want to be caught for anything. And his famous sergeant, of course, was him. That's him there, look, on the left.
On the picture?
Yeah. That's Hawkins. Mm-hmm. That's Milano shot down. That's only a 215. And I'm coming from above there, underneath Milano, and I shot that one down. That's a picture commissioned by jewellers and navigation instruments and mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. To celebrate their 300th year in business. And they're out of business now, unfortunately. And I can't remember their names. But that's why that's there. That is the Marlboro Girls Spitfire, which I got. I used it in my aeroplane. You didn't have an aeroplane if you didn't. You took what was there. But that was, I flew down to Marlboro School to show the girls what they'd bought. And that's an original painting. That's worth a lot of money. And so we went on, nothing but bloody trouble with Milan. I got to the stage I disliked it so intensely. And I could fly him out of the sky. I was first a very pilot, but he was a magnificent shot. And he shot a lot of aircraft down, which I didn't. In fact, what I could have been shooting airplanes down, we were escorting American bombers, so there was no chance. But it doesn't matter. But the thing is, Milan stops any form of decoration, anything for me. And I was promoted from pilot officer to flight lieutenant. And that wasn't, he didn't do that. Lord Dowding did it. Chief Marshal Dowding. Was his son at Tilden. But Milan was not a nice man at all. We were made up, came back, couldn't get his undercarriage down. And the flanges on which the undercarriage rests were brass. And the loop that they went into, steel, and steel rubbing on brass, it was a harridge on the brass, and when you turn the handle to put the undercarriage down, it won't go because it's jammed. So he said, have a look at the fly underneath me, see if you can see anything. So I'm trying to fly underneath him, was a self-appointed medic in the squadron, Hastings, who was self-appointed squadron training officer, everything. What he was a bugler in the Salvation Army. Oh, he was a bloody bastard. Never stopped talking. They called him Parrot. So I said to my lad, if you turn upside down and put your undercarriage down, it'll work. And your undercarriage will be released. When you turn back, it'll drop out and lock into place. How can I do it with that silly bugger underneath me in my bloody way? And so it didn't do it, and it had to land with the undercarriage up. And I said to Hastings, you bloody fools, I told you to land and you've got everybody's way. And then he hit him all, I did it. It was terrible, hit. It was a very powerful man, was my lad. There was no need for it. But Hastings was so busy training all the new blokes. He said, we get a new pilot, next thing he's dead. That's what they say, how it works. That's how it works, Hastings. Well, I'm going to try and stop it. I say, you can't. I can if I take him up and tell him what to do, show him what to do. I said, these blokes, have only done about 10 hours flying on a Spitfire. So, anyway, he was going to do it his way. And of course, one of them flew straight through him. So, two Spitfires gone and two pilots. Well, we couldn't afford to lose our pilots all aircraft. But then we had always a couple of bad lads in our squadron. I had no pleasure with them. Peter Chester's and Peter St. John. There's a book on the table. That one, yeah.
It's called Epitaph for the Few by Michael Kendrick.
Yes. It's all poems. Has written, Buddy Cullen wrote a few. That's Robert.
So it's a picture on page 70 of the book of Wing Commander Robert Stanford Tuck.
Yeah. That was my chum.
And it's a book of its poems.
Yeah.
To commemorate the Battle of Britain pilots that were lost.
Yes. That's 74 squadron.
And this is page 82 of the same book. Again, it's a picture of the 74 squadron, Tiger squadron.
Yeah, and I'm sitting on the floor at the right hand side looking at it.
Front row sitting down on the floor on the right hand side as you look at it, looking extremely young. So you must have been about 19 now?
Yes.
Not even 20 by this
stage? No, and I was led in the squadron.
And were the other men about the same age as you, or
what?
Were the other men the same age?
No, they were older. Older children than me.
And did, how did they react to having somebody so young in charge?
They were quite happy. You see, we're not standing on the squadron at Dunkirk time. And this again, due to Milan and Paddy Bird, our duty was to fly from Malcolm Island down to Cali at 20,000 feet. Chase the German bombers who were bombing the poor blokes on the beach. But we hadn't to go down. So Ben said to Milan, "There's a war going on right under our noses, and we're not seeing any of it. Let's go down lower and see what's going on." And we did, and we lost half the squadron. He was what it went, and nobody was unhappy about it. But a lot did go, and there were the older pilots. I don't think Paddy Tracy got caught on that one, but it was at that time he was shot down, and he landed in France. He was captured and taken to a holding centre where they were marshalling prisoners of war. And they said he had to go to the toilet, it was terrible. And so they let him go to the toilet. He went into a cubicle and smashed the window and stayed behind the door. The Germans rushed out, saw the broken window, and said, "Escaped." And off they went rushing, and so he just walked out, took his time, over the fencing and away. And he got to a beck or something, a stream, and there's a rowboat there, and he got in the rowboat, and he was rowing for England as hard as he could go. When somebody had seen him, and a seaplane went after him, and they knocked him on the head, dragged him out into the seaplane, took him back, where he met Buzz Lembry. And Buzz Lembry had a very colourful career in the Air Force, and they said to Paddy Tracy, "Don't walk too close to me," because they were marching to a prison camp in Germany. "Don't get too close to me, but I'll give you the nod and we go straight into a ditch." And they came to a signpost which said Embry. So Buzz Lembry said, "That's for me," and in the ditch he went. Never let Paddy Tracy know. And Paddy's looking around for him. There's no bustle. It's gone. So I said, "Oh, bugger this." And he went into a ditch. And they didn't see him go. And eventually, he found a bicycle with flat tyres. So this'll do me. And he cycled. The tyres came off. But he rode it on his rims. And he rode it right down to Marseille. By that time, Germany had divided France into Vichy France and occupied France. And so Paddy went to the Irish consul in Marseille, and he said, "Don't worry, I'll get you through Spain into Gibraltar," which they did. And then he was put on a Pan Am flying boat at Lisbon. They took him up to Lisbon, put him on a Pan Am flying boat. And they said, "Well, where are you going?" "I said, I'm going to America." I said, "I want to go to England." Anyway, to go to America, they got flown back to England. And he got back, and he was given commander of Bader's squadron. And it was 254. And they were at Montlesham. And he was up, his number two was a new pilot, hadn't learned much, and he flew into him. So Paddy got killed, and of course he did a flow into him did as well. But very, very sad when you think of the trials and tribulations that Tracy got through.
What was the atmosphere like on camp when you were having so many losses in such a short space of time?
It wasn't nice. It wasn't nice. And then I'm quite psychic. And that same bloke arrived. And he says, well, somebody will be dead tomorrow. And sure as hell, they shot down. That happened to Peter Sinton. They wouldn't keep up. They said, you must stay in formation. Stop lagging behind. And we were sent off the whole squadron. There was a raid had come up. A German fighter sweep. And we never saw anything. And when we landed, we were at Manston. When we landed, there was no Peter's engine. And so they ran around all over the place, our intelligence officer. And nobody knew anything about it. And I think eventually somebody from the, what they call, there were civilians. To tell us what the number of aircraft coming over, and they, Observer Corps, that's right. You better than me. They said they saw the Spitfire crash. And he went to the ground quite a way, about 8 to 10 feet. Anyway, these people after the war found it and dug it out, and Peter was given a proper burial. And they managed to get the dashboard, the black flying instrument panel of the aircraft, and they brought it to Patchwork Museum in the Mersey for me to see. This was well after the war, and I said, what's this money doing? I said, that's all he had in his pocket. And there was a couple of pennies and two boppies, two to Florida, and a screw them into the dashboard. And that's probably the most money Pete's ever had in his pocket at any time. But Pete's are the two Peters, Peter Chester's and Peter St. John, are great friends of mine. Particularly Peter Chester's, and his family were. His mother and father came to Buckingham Palace when I got the blast of IDFC. They came with me. They're a lovely family.
We'll just pause it there and I'll just change the tape over.